And now, let's turn to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local officials, residents, and personalities providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, once again, it's my great pleasure to welcome here into the studio, Nate Wallace, city manager. I pause a little bit when I say this to give proper effect of the city of Palmer. Welcome, Nate. No, we don't say new. We don't say old. We just say, you know, you're in that middle ground. Well, the city has successfully done the first half of what is the city's fiscal year, since you're now involved in the beginning process. I attended the last council meeting, and you provided a review of the state of the budget, where things were. As you're prepping to do and beginning to do the next budget, and how would you, for those listeners who might have missed that whole thing, how would you say the financial status and the budgeting of the city is at this point?
We're in good stead. We've got a good, healthy reserve that we've had for several years now, and no need to dip into that more than we have.
That sounds encouraging.
That's good news. Palmer's been pretty fiscally conservative over the years, and we continue to follow that trend. So it's something we have to watch, just because we are stewards of the public's money, providing services and not disrupting those services for financial reasons. There's things that break down. The garbage truck has issues every now and then, and our snowplows have issues now and then, but those are things we can easily fix. But if you have a budget crisis, those things are pretty tough to fix. A lot of belt tightening and soul searching to some degree on what service you can provide the city, and we haven't had to do that because, again, how we've managed money in the past.
And that's a good thing. I'm comparing that to another meeting that happened recently this week, which was the Borough Assembly special meeting, because they're tussling with a significant issue that involves a number of things, but one of the topics in particular has to do with policing the borough. And I know, and the reason why I bring it up here is because potentially the city of Palmer could be involved in part of the solution. For those listeners who are not aware, the borough has been policed essentially by state troopers.
Yes.
And the numbers have declined a bit. In fact, some would say drastically, while the population has increased. And there's been a question about how to do this, how to extend police powers and the policing that I'll use the phrase that the cities of Wasilla and Palmer enjoy, because you've been down the road, you've accommodated for that. So part of the budget involves the police department.
Yes.
But the borough has not had that. They've not had a long history of providing funding for a policing effort in the borough itself. And it's a very, very complex and difficult thing. If the state is not going to step up and increase, for example, the policing. And for the city of Palmer, we've talked about this before. When you come to the border and there's something happening just on the other side, the police department doesn't come to a screeching halt and say, whoop, oh, sorry. Our GPS says that's not something we can attend to.
Now, if there's a situation that's an emergency, the police will respond. A lot of that, too, outside the city limits, we don't get the call because it goes to MATCOM dispatch, and they'll dispatch the appropriate resources. So if there's a situation that's across our so-called red line, they'll dispatch the appropriate agency, and that agency generally, for us, it's Alaska State Troopers. If they can't respond, then the troopers will request assistance, and depending on what we have going on, we will assist. But if we're chasing somebody, we will go beyond our borders. If you call 911 again, it's not gonna. If you're outside the city, it won't ring in the Palmer dispatch. So there's that piece, and unless they see it, they're not gonna get the call to respond to, say, Equestrian Acres, which is only a half mile down the road. So
right, okay. So from a budgetary standpoint, I know that this is the year that is different in the sense that the dispatch center has done its move, And so there's both income and expense changes to the budget, which you had planned for.
Yes.
And that doesn't seem to have caused a huge disruption in the flow of the budget because of planning to make that happen. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, we saw it coming. The borough had talked about sending out an RFP for years, off and on, sputs and spurts. So last year they did send an RFP out early in the year. So we put in our proposal, and then we went through the transition. We weren't awarded the proposal, so we went through the transition in the summer. So last year we really provided services for half a year, and then we had the half year to sort out how we're going to come into this year. So this is our first full year, fully funded by the city. So it was painful last year more so than this year, as we had to downsize. We went from 12 dispatchers to 6. And then, of course, we had to go through a computer. Part of the reason that the borough was looking at doing something different with dispatch was because the equipment was aging. So they wanted to invest in new equipment and potentially in a new organization, and that's how that worked out. So we ended up buying our own equipment last year, funding that, downsizing, and then now this year we're fully operational for the size of the Palmer and fire departments that we have.
Okay. That makes sense. I know that you solicited input from the council to essentially identify, it sounded, places where the council felt that there could be either changes in the budget or a focus of the budget this coming year, which essentially will be the real 2019, not fiscal year 2019.
Yes.
And any beginning sense of the vision of the council in terms of spending money?
No, there are a couple of items that were requested to look at, a potential new parkland in the in a subdivision that's being built out now, and that would potentially connect to the Crevice Moraine Trail system. So that was something that we haven't done in a while, look at acquiring property. Of course, trail systems, improving our trail systems, both sidewalks and external and paved walking trails comes up now and then and is something we always look at. Glass recycling was something that Public Works and I had looked at from a couple of different standpoints. When we were looking at concrete work, how can we bring the cost of concrete and paving down, because those are sand intensive. What can we do to bring our cost down? And one of those is glass sand. Pulverized glass to the point where it's sand. You can use it in playgrounds if you have the right equipment to grind the glass. And because there's limited to no glass recycling, that was something I asked the mayor earlier in the year what she thought, if that was something that was worth pursuing, and she thought that it was. And then we brought it to the council once we did some research on the cost to see if there was interest on the council. And it got some support, but we're a long ways from glass recycling, because it's a piece of equipment that'll have to be brought from the lower 48, and something for shipping of that size is almost the cost of the equipment. So we're going to put together a package and see if we can find some other interested partners, maybe the borough or Wasilla and the Valley Recycling, and we can have a group effort, maybe some grants from some other agencies to assist and go from there.
Well, I know Molly Boyer has been long looking at this issue as an executive director of the Recycling Center, and I personally look at it as the pile of glass grows in our garage.
Yes.
And then we make the trip in typically to Anchorage to bring the glass and get it out of the garage. But what you're describing is something that has some intriguing aspects of making use of this and not having to deal with the heavy transportation costs that are associated with moving such a heavy item as glass.
Because it's one of those things that goes to the landfill that's heavy, and it's would reduce our cost of solid waste in general, because if we pay the tipping fees, we don't have our own dump.
Right. Has that ever come up, Palmer having its own dump?
No, we don't want to have our own dump.
Okay.
There has been one in the past. I think as late as the 70s, the city did have a, a leased spot that was the city dump, but we haven't had anything like that since.
Okay.
There's a landfill within the city limits, but it's not run by the city.
Okay. And it's not all comers.
It's a demolition.
Right. And that's over by the fair.
By the fair, yes.
I got that. Okay. Well, let's turn to the topic which many people consider affects their lives. And of course, we're talking about roads.
Yes.
And the looming shadow of the Glenn Highway construction. What can we expect each time you come in and like say, okay.
There's a little more clarity now. So they've awarded a contract to QAP. I think it's Quality Asphalt. I'm not sure what the P stands for. But you've seen on the roads all over Alaska, and they've done a lot of Glenn Highway work. So the state awarded the contract to QAP. We've seen them out and about already in the last week putting up signs that say road construction ahead and end of fine areas. So they're getting ready. But the actual road construction won't start until next year. But what will start this year are all the utilities that are underground and above ground that have to be moved so that the wider road can be put in place. So there will be some roads that are dug up but won't be widened. They're going to start, I believe, next week with some clearing and grubbing around the commercial drive area, and then that'll be the first place they start relocating utilities. That work will stop or be suspended for the state fair. There may be some side work that's done, but anything that interferes with traffic will be suspended. And then they'll start on Evergreen, like the intersection of Evergreen and Glen, after Labor Day, to start moving. And my understanding is that's a huge undertaking with all the stuff that comes together, the phone lines, cable lines, electric, sewer, water. So we will see some disruption of traffic on Evergreen.
So you do not want to use Evergreen after the fair. That's what I'm hearing.
There'll be some of that. I'm not sure how they're going to direct traffic, but part of the restriction the state puts on them, they can only close the roads for no longer than 15 minutes at a time. So they can't close the road for days. So there will be pilot cars and things like that.
But that's a euphemism. I fear, can't close for more than 15. But if we put this pilot car in, the line is 3 miles long.
Yes,
it's
a significant road. And it's a significant intersection, but it has to be done. So
we understand that. Fortunately, though, I think they're. I'm guessing that the Bogard Road extension area by the high school and so on will become heavily used as an alternative. Yep. People figure that out.
So roadside Colony Way, as it comes into the center of town, will become a main thoroughfare, more so than it is now.
Okay.
Arctic and Bogard will be the detour routes, I'm sure. They'll have signage up. The city's preparing to put more signs internally, depending on what they put up where they direct traffic to. So if they put their last sign up at Dogwood and Cobb, we'll put additional signs along Dogwood and Cobb to get the folks to the downtown area that may not be familiar with some of the side roads that are there. But they assure us that they won't close off this side of the Glen. They'll keep at least two, if not three, roads open. So we have Dogwood, Arctic, Evergreen, and Colony that all come into town, as well as commercial further down. So there will be ways that are marked on how you can get to the downtown throughout the fall and then again coming this summer. But they expect to have the road widened and paved by the end of 2019's construction season. And then they'll come back in 2020 and seal, or there's like the final touches. But the contract timeline is to have the road done by 2019, substantially complete. So
that's the entire Glen?
From just above Arctic, basically from the bike tunnel all the way down to Inner Springer.
The
fair.
There's still that other.
Phase two is from basically the fair down to the interchange.
And that, any sense of when that might happen?
I think that will start shortly after.
Okay.
That'll probably go out to bid in 2019 or 2020.
What about the north end going from Arctic?
I haven't seen anything other than some work at Moose Creek to redo that bridge.
Okay.
I haven't seen a timeline for the piece between what they did on from Farm Fishhook up to Farm Loop, that's that section from now Fishhook to basically Bogard that we'd like to see widened or at least resurfaced and a bike path put in. But That's the one piece the bike path will stop at the bike tunnel at Auckland.
Any concern about the erosion of that steep cliff there just beyond Fishhook and the Glen?
They did some work to try and move the road away from it, but I don't think there was any work done to stop the erosion, so that will continue as time goes on.
It's a beautiful view.
It is.
But it just looks like a lot of loose stuff that just sloughs off.
Yep.
All the time. Okay. Any other routes that are worth mentioning here that will affect life in the city of Palmer?
Not that I'm. We're doing. We'll do again like we did this year. We'll do pothole work and sections, 8-foot sections of roads that need to be repaired. We did a good section over by the intersection of Himmer and the Palmer Moose Road, I think is what it's called now. So that was badly in need of some work. We've done some patching on Cobb, but no major construction on the horizon for roads within the city. We've got $500,000 set aside for matching, and the first project that was identified as a priority was Auklet from the bike tunnel. So as the state does that piece on the west side, we would try and upgrade the east side. We've got an engineer's estimate. We're working on how that might get financed, whether there's grant funds available, which from the state are limited, or trying to get some of our interior roads put on the state's transportation infrastructure or improvement plan so that we're eligible for federal funding.
Okay.
City roads are hard to get on that plan, but one of the things is matching funds will bump you up the list, and since we have set aside $500,000, that may get some of our roads bumped up.
Okay. Well, recently the borough experienced the beginning of what is continuing to be a challenging IT problem. Their services had been somewhat dramatically curtailed. They're coming back. They've had a lot of people helping to fix this virus attack. How about the city? The city sitting quietly over as not a
desirable. Yes, we're sitting quietly so that we don't attract any attention from those.
Not a desirable target.
So when word came out that was going on, we looked at our – we have a contractor that manages our – Alaska Connect manages our IT services, and they're also contracted to provide our security, cybersecurity. So they were aware of what was going on. They're tied into the FBI's InfraGuard organization, so they received the updates. My understanding is this was a zero-day type of event, which means there's no record of what this new thing is. So those folks that create walls and disinfectants for this type of virus are working on how to prevent this in future areas. So, again, right. They've given us some – that organization has given us suggestions and tips to help prevent this in the future. And then much like the borough, we do have cyber insurance, and we've had that for several years. Not that that prevents it, but if we were to have an incident – if it was as bad as it hit the borough, it would affect us the same way. It would be catastrophic and potentially have to replace equipment. We don't have as much, and we don't have the staff that the borough has to replace those kind of things. So having the safety blanket, so to speak, of cyber insurance is what we would fall back on.
So one of the things, and we were able to interview Eric Wyatt, who's the IT director of the borough, and he's in a variety of ways has described and presented details of how they've been doing the fix. But in the meantime, obviously, individual departments and operations, whether it's the landfill, for example, mm-hmm. which it's dependent on a variety of different aspects of systems. The credit card would work, but the system they used to calculate the volume of what was going into the landfill was down, so they did manual calculations.
Yes.
And so on. I'm curious. My sense was they were able to make that transition, but it wasn't as if – it didn't sound as if, okay – system's down, now how do we do it? And they would turn to protocol book, implement,
yep.
System's down. The city has a smaller number of places like that. But I would think that that would be an interesting question. Okay, system's down. What do you do? That prepped?
There's a big push for the city to become more e-friendly. So most of our systems aren't reliant. We rely on computers, but we could, in a lot of cases, we could go to Best Buy, buy a computer off the shelf, and resume a lot of our work.
Okay.
There's some work that's web-based that, again, we could buy a computer off the shelf and again, with password changes, tie back into work. So not having the IT staff that other organizations have, we've been behind in coming up to
the
becoming
place,
an
right?
e-city. So in that sense, you know, that's not a woo, look at us. We can still use typewriters. That's not something I would say the city would be proud of. But you know, on the other hand, the systems we do have are easily done and easily picked back up if we were to suffer something like that. Not to say we don't have servers that have a lot of data. There's a lot of data that we protect. We don't maintain credit card data. That's a third party
server. Sure.
So that was the first thing when the borough got hit is, my credit card.
It's protected and safe.
It's done by a third party with all the protocols that come with it. And we don't maintain property records, but we do have utility billing. So the billing process would go through somewhat of a hiccup. And then our financial data from years back, as we go through the budget season, it would be stubby pencils to come up with next year's budget. But again, most of it's on Excel spreadsheets. We keep those on hard drive, on disk drives, floppy disks, CDs. Boy, am I aging myself. So what's a floppy disk?
Well,
thumb drives.
You move from tapes to floppy disk, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So the math that goes behind the budget is there, but for an audit purpose, we carry over from year to year, so our audits are coherent from year to year. So those types of things would suffer, but we could put together a budget. Our money is in a bank. It's not in our basement. So, again, not being entirely reliant on the Internet of Things, we're in a position that we could survive relatively easier than what the borough has. But, again, the borough has so much stuff that goes on that the city just doesn't.
Yeah,
we don't charge for parks, or we don't have to manage that kind of stuff. We don't have a landfill where we charge. We have utility billing, but it would affect the city. It would be an impact to the employees and the citizens. But we would probably be able to recover quicker on a manual basis than a lot of other places.
Yeah, truly small government in some respects.
There's advantages, yes.
Yeah, make that happen. There's one other topic I wanted to bring up before we finish today, and that was when the party over at the new sewer plant.
When's the party?
When's that going to happen?
Probably next year.
Okay.
But it's substantially complete. We're operating under a performance period now. So the EPA is, I wouldn't say they're back in our knickers, but they're now back, you know, we're processing water differently.
Okay.
So DEC and EPA will start monitoring our processes. We'll be asking for an interim permit to operate differently. The system, it's a big concrete basin with little plastic floating discs that bacteria grows on that eats and converts, and what's called nitrification for, I guess, the biologists out there, to convert the wastewater into something that's can go back into the freshwater. But we still have two ponds, so it goes through two ponds before it goes out to the river, and it's treated with ultraviolet, which is what we've always done. The piece that we've been trying to knock down is ammonia, not fecal matter. We've never had a problem with fecal matter. We haven't had problems with solids. It's been ammonia, and the system came online 3 weeks before substantial completion, and then within 2 weeks we saw where it was knocking the ammonia down before it even got to the ponds, to a point where it was within the limits. Because it was going to the ponds that had the old water, it took 2 weeks. That's about how long it takes for water to travel through our system. 2 weeks before it actually got to the water that was treated in that new system to the river. So,
cool.
We're
That's
down
good.
To 0.5 milligrams per liter, and our limit is, I think this time of year, it's 3.7. So, yeah, we're well under.
So you may be up for best in the state award.
Well, we have to renew our PIT, so our permit, so we're hoping that the standards don't change.
All right.
But right now, it's indications are it's going to meet the needs of the permitting process.
That sounds good. Any last comments? We're coming up really close to the end here.
Now, State Fair Parade is coming up in a couple of weeks. Get your applications in if you want to have a float or have your organization showcase itself. So that's the next big event in Palmer.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Nate Wallace, City Manager of the City of Palmer, for coming in and sharing today. We covered a wide range of topics. It's always fun. Look forward to the next time. And good day out there.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local folks providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.